This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
How do you feel stepping in for Nick now that you've seen him posting pictures of his dinner and also having terrible Zaha-based opinions? How do you feel now?
The dinner part I don't care about. The Zaha opinions really bothered me, but you know that's always going to happen, isn't it? I mean,
is it always going to happen that a fully grown adult says that Zaha needs a rest to teach him a lesson?
All right, stay off Twitter, because that's exactly the opinion you get when you go on Twitter when Palace don't win a match. So
yeah,
read that all day. You know, I've even read a couple of Vieira outs, serious ones too. Is it time to consider a new manager? So I mean, come on. That Zaha one wasn't even, the best. Wasn't even the worst take of the day today. So
no, fair enough.
Are you gonna name and shame?
Oh no, I'm not gonna name and shame, because I muted the guy as soon as I read it. I muted it. That's what I always do. I'm very good on Twitter. It's not that I don't have a problem with people having an opinion. Of course you can have an opinion, but if I feel it's too negative, I don't want to constantly read it. So I'll either mute it, and if I continuously, I just block you, because I don't want to read about, you know, you've been negative at Palace. I can be negative at Palace when I feel like it. I was a lot under Hodgson, not so much now. I've taken a whole new attitude towards it. But I don't need to read other people's opinions, but you can have the opinion. I don't have to share it. And you know, I don't have to read yours. So that's what I do. I just mute
you. Yeah. But that's the thing that people miss with the things like Twitter, isn't it? It's like, you shouldn't get annoyed about how other people use it
and go back at them back and forth with it.
It's like, it's up to you. If you're managing your Twitter account, that's your Twitter account. You own it. It's yours. You can you get to use it how you see fit. So if you block people because you're seeing their stuff constantly, and you don't want to read it, it's not necessarily a personal reflection. It's you using your Twitter account, right?
Exactly.
You know, yes, it is fun to block people just to get a reaction sometimes. I think I've only ever blocked about 8 people.
Wow, Chris, you know? I'm not joking. I might have 60 people blocked on Twitter easily.
Really?
60?
Maybe more.
60?
Easily. Because that's Kara. All they have to do, I'm not kidding, all they have to do is say something, have a really bad take on Palace like 1 week when we haven't won. And I had to constantly read it, and I see it. I'm like, block. Because I want to see it again. You know what I mean? I just block. So I'll go into whatever you go into on the settings, and I'll see, oh my God, I blocked so and so. I'm like, I don't.
But that's kind of like, that's the whole point I'm making. It's like, you say it's negative on your mental health, so that's why you have the right to do that.
Yeah.
You know? Exactly. But it's the difference between social media and real life. So you can block someone on Twitter, right? Because the way they express themselves on Twitter impacts negatively on you, and you have a right to do that. But you can be nice. You can have a perfectly civil, nice conversation with them outside of that, and even be friends with them and just say, hey, I actually like you, but not on Twitter. Your Twitter persona is something that's not good for me to read. And actually, you know, I know people like that as well. But I think, again, it goes back to that thing, didn't it, where people actually use block and mute, and then they announce that they've blocked and mute, and they use it as a stick to beat people. I mean, we've all done it. We've all said somebody's blocked. I actually, I'm looking now, I have so many more blocked accounts than I thought.
How many?
I think that this is people blocking me. 52. I'm scrolling down it. I'm scrolling down it, and I can promise you, like most, not very few of them are Palace fans.
Oh, okay.
I've got people like Nigel Farage blocked, you know, people like that.
Yeah,
Lawrence Fox blocked, and you know, that kind of people.
What number are you? Where are you seeing the number?
So if you go into like this is a great start to the show. And if you go into the your privacy and safety settings and you go to mute and block.
Yeah.
You know, you've got muted accounts, muted words. I'm tempted to read out what my muted words are, but I only have two. What's that?
But I can only...
One of mine is Donald Trump is one of my muted words. Okay. He's 4 years before your reign in office. It was horrible to see his name pop up, so I just muted him. So.
Yeah.
I have two, and they're the same, but one has got at in front of it. I'm not going to say what it is, but it's a Palace account. A Palace fan account with content. It's not FYP. Just to be 100% clear.
I've got to share mine because mine's a weird. Cool. I have Everton, Manchester United, Conor Gallagher, Arsenal, Roy Hodgson, Wayne Hennessy, and Donald Trump. What is wrong with me?
That is so funny.
Isn't that a list? I can tell you why. I give a background on all of them. Right, Everton was because of Frank Lampard went there. Mainly because I don't like Man United. Conor Gallagher, when people wanted Conor to come back, and I was like, you know, I'm tired of hearing, you know, Conor Gallagher come back, please. Arsenal, you know, my Arsenal's hatred. Roy Hodgson, enough said. Wayne Hennessy, enough said. I'm talking about Donald Trump already. So that is weird though. Everton, Man United, and Arsenal. Roy Hodgson, Conor Gallagher.
Do you know what? It's funny. I don't understand how I got to this point, right? Genuinely, but I couldn't care less anymore. Like, we used to talk about it on the show. It was like someone would tweet something negative at you, and it would just stay with me. Like, it'd be the one negative thing you heard from the week, and it would just stay in my head, and I'd think about it, and I'd draft three or four replies, and then delete them, and then all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Now it just doesn't even enter my brain, and people just—I think they've given up. maybe DR's taking the high profile now. maybe he gets it, and rightly so, he deserves it. So
he does.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport, powered by fans.
Hello and welcome to Back of the Nest. I'm Chris Hambling, and I'm joined today by Cara Skipper and Patrick O'Connor for the match report. So we've had a very long warm-up chat before the show, so we won't spend too much time talking to each other. But Patrick, late substitute in for Mr. Nick Gillard, who decided that dinner and bad jokes and bad opinions on Wilfred Zaha were, in fact, preferable to joining us on the podcast. So thank you, and good to have you on board.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Just really quickly, I was yesterday I spent the weekend in Philadelphia. They had a fan fest, so I went down there. Visit my son who's lives down there. So a lot of Crystal Palace fans from all over the country, Chicago, South Florida, California. And I got to not meet Ian Wright. I saw Ian Wright and he signed the shirt for me, which is really nice.
That's fantastic. Absolute hero. My brain would have melted completely, Patrick. So I don't know what I'd done. I've spoken to him on when he had his show on Absolute Radio. I was a semi-regular Palace phone-in guest on that for a while. And that was always weird, you know, having a chat with him and you know, talking a bit of Palace. But that's a fantastic thing. I hate to see how old he is now, because that feels weird, doesn't it? I think he's 60 now. Why is he in 60?
So a few years older than me. So got you.
Well, you know, but you still look the same as you did at 21. So it's unfair.
People do say that, which is weird. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Anyway, Cara, you were scheduled to be on the show, so you've not stepped into anyone, but thanks anyway.
Pleasure. Always a pleasure. That just made me think, have you ever blocked Ian Wright on Twitter, Patrick?
No. I have three football heroes from Palace. Kenny Sansom was the first. Ian Wright was the second, and Wilfred Zaha was the third, so no, I would never have blocked Ian Wright. Even though he's not really... all Palace now, obviously the Arsenal connection. Now I love and still love Ian Wright. So no,
No, that's a shame. Cara, you're in a caravan. Care to elaborate?
No, it's my mum's caravan down by the coast. So here for the weekend, mostly to recover from the horrendousness of the experience of going to the game yesterday, to be honest. But yeah.
And I appreciate, obviously, that Nick isn't on. So I'm going to have to ask you this question. When you're staying there, is it referred to as the caravan?
Wow.
Double wow.
Sorry, I've got nothing. Absolutely nothing for that.
That was slightly worse than I had anticipated that reaction would be. I can take a lot of things, but complete and utter silence is unacceptable.
Apologies.
Yeah.
But not really apologies. Fine. I feel like you're the one that needs to apologise for that.
I'll think about it. I'll consider your point and I'll consider the disappointment on Patrick's face and think about my actions. I don't think I've really got anything to say. I know some of the listeners get fed up when I talk about my cats and or dogs. So, I guess I won't share that news this week. It's sad, really. It's all I had going for me. But no, I think this week we're obviously focusing on a game that wasn't the best. We'll talk about some of the reasons why. But before we do that, just a little bit of news this week. First bit I'll talk about and we can chat about the reasons for that and what we think of it. And that's that Crystal Palace Academy forward John Kamani-Gordon won the Premier League 2 Player of the Month award in September. So this season, 11 goals in 9 appearances, which is an incredible rate of return. And as we know, this season made the bench against Chelsea, Leeds and Leicester. Not getting on in any of them, but I think, first of all, it's nice to see a player being rewarded for that excellent form by being exposed to the first team like that. And I know Patrick obviously is somebody who watches the academy very intently. He's a player we've talked about before in the past where, he's got something about him and we're wondering when he'll kick on. It seems like he's kicked on a bit and he's now training week in, week out with the first team. But a little bit of a shame not to get any minutes considering the amount of subs we can make.
Yeah, I watched an interview with Chris Grierson on Palace TV Plus, and I love his personality. He seems very, very happy to have won that award, deservedly so, and to train with the first team. But you're right, he hasn't gotten any minutes. So DR and I have these, sometimes we do these weekly shows, Palace News, and one of the things I bang on about is the academy. In order for us to really show that we are progressing as an academy, we can't just produce players and win matches and win PL2 whatever, we have to get these players a chance. John Kamani-Gordon's been injured last season, but really playing well this season. I hope he gets the minutes at some point going forward. Yesterday we had Kofi Barmer and JK, and there was Malcolm Boy's not academy, but young players on the bench yesterday. None of them got on yesterday, but at some point hopefully they'll get some minutes, because again, if we're going to really progress the academy, it can't be just producing and loaning them out. They have to play for our first team at some point.
Now, I suppose, and on that, Cara, when you think about, I suppose, if you picked Mateta as the striker coming onto the pitch in the, I think it was the 76th minute. I was going to touch on this later on, but I think he has had, I'd say, 5 touches or maybe less than that. I think it was 5 touches of the ball the whole time he was on. When you think about that, Could realistically bringing J.K. Gordon off the bench have been any less effective, do you think?
I mean, there's so much to go into there. This is maybe going to be controversial from what everybody else has been saying since yesterday, but I don't really blame JP. Like, you can't stick someone on to a game that just isn't working with a midfield that isn't working as late in the game as he came on and really expect him to, like, I don't know, slot into a system that there's just no slots in because nobody really knows what it is. I'm not talking about in general, I'm talking about just for that game. So I feel like that's maybe a harsh comparison. I don't know who you could have brought on unless they were just an absolute, like, lone wolf that could have done it all by themselves, could have slotted into the way that we were playing yesterday and done any better than what JP did, really.
Yeah, possibly my phrasing was wrong there. It was kind of a if you throw him on because of most of the reasons you've mentioned already, it wouldn't have mattered if you'd thrown him on against Mateta. That wasn't necessarily disparaging against Mateta. It was more a case of saying, you know, you could have put on me and I probably would have had 5 touches, probably the ball hitting me as I fell over, but you know, that kind of a thing. But I would have been as effective because, yeah, as you say, nothing by that point was working at all. But you know what I mean? I was just saying that there's an opportunity there. You know, if you're not, we clearly weren't chasing the game for reasons I'll get into later on. I'm about to go into the match report straight away. But anyway, look, JK Gordon being very much rewarded for his wonderful form, but just a little concern from my perspective that you know, player who's playing so well, winning the Player of the Month award for September, he's not going to win it for October because he's up training with the first team but not getting minutes, and you know, that'll potentially make him less effective when, you know, in terms of the regular game time he gets in the academy. So it's a really tough balance to strike, and I appreciate in the Premier League there are no easy moments to throw young players in. So I, you know, personally, you know, when you have the number of subs we had, so you know, we could have made 5, we made 4. You know, there's probably 5 minutes at the end of that game where everything had just gone to shit. So I'd quite like to have seen JK thrown on there and just given that appearance, given him that you know, 5 minutes and see how he goes. Anyway, so moving from very good news to not so good news, and Cara, Palace women lost 2-0 to Sunderland today. You added it. I'm just wondering if you have any further insight other than just seeing that result come in.
Well, I didn't get to see the game, unfortunately. But
because you're in the car, man.
Because I'm in the car, man.
It's going to work. Yeah. I'm going to keep going at it. This one.
God loves a trier. But no, Sunderland are, well, they had 1 point going into this game. Not had a great start to the season. We had a better start to the season, but have struggled a bit in our last couple of games. So just definitely not the result I think we would have been hoping for at any point. But maybe they were looking at today to think, okay, we get like a good result against Sunderland and then kick on and forget about the couple of disappointing games we've had so far. But, you know, we're still sitting fourth. We're a point behind Charlton and London City, who are drawing on points in second and third. Our next game coming up is going to be against Bristol, who are top of the table. So I guess two ways of looking at that, right? Like, can look at it as a bit of a worry. It's going to be a difficult game, or a really good opportunity for them to kind of have that game as the comeback and tighten that kind of points tally at the top, and an opportunity to kick on for the rest of the season. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, you know, as we've spoken about many times, it's a practically a brand new team. So even though we had a really good start in our first couple of games, I guess this patch is always going to come as the team kind of settle into the season. So we just got to hope that it is that kind of a few blips along the way and they find their rhythm and their momentum again, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And was it, I think I'm right in saying Bristol City did a pretty good job of us on us in the cup. Am I right? I think the WSL Cup,
four or something. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Revenge time, that's what it's all about. Okay. Well, that's it for the news this week. So we'll get straight into the match review now. And you know, obviously we have to start with the fact that it was not a good game, you know, and I suppose I'm gonna start with my thoughts. And I watched the game and I'd been out earlier in the day and I had to set the game and record because I knew I was going to miss the start of it and traffic was awful and all this kind of stuff. And I'm just, oh God. So I got back and I'd avoided all spoilers, not that there were any, but I'd avoided all spoilers, sat down, started watching the game. About 20 minutes had gone. So obviously, you know, trying to watch it as live, and I'm just about 5 minutes in, I'm like, I'm just going to probably pop up to double speed here. Because you know, nothing's really happening, and it's pretty frustrating. So you know, I got to be honest. I wished after catching up, I wished I could have watched the whole game on about 30 speed, because that probably would have been just about bearable. But anyway, so it sort of came to me afterwards. I'd almost forgot the game. I just thought like there was so little in that for me to focus on, and probably by far and away the least entertained I've been watching Patrick Vieira's Palace. That I couldn't quite work out why it was. So I just started sort of thinking, and I just thought, you know what? You know, Lucas come out at the end of the game and talked about the clean sheet. And, you know, we've talked about having a couple of opportunities here and there. And I just feel like we went into that game with the mentality of, let's correct what's been going wrong. You know, what's been going wrong is, you know, coming under pressure late on in games, conceding goals, you know, being in decent positions and losing them. And, you know, and we've tried to correct that, and we did a better job. You know, Leeds probably did us a bit of damage ahead of this game because they came out and they pressed, and that's very much what Leicester try and do. They, and I say try and do to be patronising, because they don't do it very well. They're pretty terrible at it. But we went into this game taking Elise out of the midfield, bringing in Jeffrey Schlupp, and we did that because that was probably something we should have done for the first half against Leeds, to give us that little bit more solidity in midfield, and just to make the game that little bit easier at the start when we were being pressed. So we came into this match thinking that Leicester were going to press us, thinking that we needed a better way of playing. And we did. We played better in terms of moving the ball that quick around the back, not allowing Leicester's press to affect us too much. There was no real panic or anything like that. But ultimately, we sacrificed the balance of the team in doing so. We allowed our worries about what Leicester could do to us impact our thoughts and process around what we could do to Leicester. And frankly, and Patrick, tell me if I'm wrong, I think Leicester are a bad team. I don't think they're particularly good this season. They're low on confidence. And I think we let them off the hook by worrying too much about them.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, they are a bad team. Most of their points, or all the points, were at home, so they're not a terrible home team. But this season, just in general, I think they've stopped playing for Rodgers for the most part. But what I will say is they do have some threats. So Patson Daka's speed was a problem all game. You know, that's how Anderson drew his yellow card, which kind of early in his mid first half. And I think Madison's a threat. I think Madison's a very good player. But what I will say about them, they were very, very smart. They targeted our weakest link, which was Joel Ward. And they did it consistently the entire match. Harvey Barnes had a field day on that side. It was ridiculous. So though Leicester is not a very good side, I think tactically, they did a really good job. And I think we're lucky to have gotten that point, honestly, as poor as we played.
I think that's fair. And Cara, was there anything at the, you know, at the game, any feeling from yourself in general, whether, the, you know, when you saw the lineup and you saw the, as we kicked off the game and the way, you know, our shape and how we were approaching it, you know, what was the initial feeling? You know, did you feel like we should have picked, you know, kept Elise on the pitch and not made that change? And or was Definitely. It kind of a case of, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. No, that's my biggest kind of bugbear. I think, well, to take it back to the beginning, we all kind of stood in the, waiting to go out to our seats and looked at the lineup and was like, oh, okay, weird. Like maybe Elise's got a knock or something, but like, fair enough. Let's see what happens. But I think the overwhelming feeling that then never changed was like, this just doesn't really make sense. Like nobody could really look at it and be like, what are you trying to do here? Like what problems are you trying to solve, and why are you choosing like those as the solutions? My biggest frustration is that I feel like, you know, you've got a Leicester goalkeeper who is not confident, who, like, you know that if you put him under pressure he's going to make mistakes. We've got JP, who could have absolutely terrorised him from the beginning. And this isn't me saying that I thought Edouard was bad, by the way. I didn't at all. But I just felt like that was a perfect game for JP to have been used, and to really kind of not just use his size and his strength, but also like his kind of personality as a player to really kind of go at the keeper, basically. That would have drawn some of the defence's attention onto him and away from Wilf, who was just double, triple marked the whole time, basically, until he got taken off. And people give him Wilf, like, shit for it. When, like, what do you expect if we've got basically no other threat going forward? That's not Wilf's fault. Like, and if he's then surrounded by three players at the whole time, like, what miracles do people expect him to perform? So my biggest thing was just frustration all the way through, because it just didn't at any point seem to make sense. It wasn't even like we could see what was trying, what kind of, that it made sense what we were trying to do, but we just weren't doing it very well. Just none of it made sense, really. And like Elise not coming on until that late, I will never understand what the thinking behind that was. And I think we saw it at the beginning. There were like balls just going into kind of empty space with no one anywhere near. And I don't know, it felt at times, it kind of felt like they almost thought Elise was going to be on and then pass the ball and realize he wasn't there, you know? Like it was, I found the whole thing just bizarre and very frustrating.
Yeah, the thing about the one shot on Danny Ward is embarrassing to his highest level, because he's not even debatable. He's the worst goalkeeper in the Premier League right now. I don't think it's not even close. Then we did a preview show, and I think the stat was he's given up, I think, 24 goals on like 43 shots, something ridiculous. Like every other shot goes in the net. So that was poor. So, but with the starting lineup, that's weird because I didn't like it. All right. So I would have much preferred Olise, Doucouré and Eze, because of the fact that having used it against Chelsea, you know, give it 3-4 matches. So go, you know, let's get to like maybe Southampton. And if it's not working, you go back to putting in Schlupp. But like Hambo said, I think Vio overthought it and thought, you know what, if I can get the Jeffrey Schlupp who, you know, goes box to box, drives the ball forward, is decent defensively, can help out Doucouré in the tackling, it's going to work. And it just didn't work. And I heard someone say, you know, the Leicester fans worried because apparently Schlupp, I don't remember this, scores a lot against Leicester. Is that true? I don't remember that stat.
Yeah. True.
He does, yeah, you know, every once in a while. All right. So maybe that came to his thinking. But I really would have liked to have seen Olise, Eze and Doucouré. I'll admit, I don't love it because I think they give Doucouré way too much work. And then when he's on a yellow card, yeah, he can't do what he does best. But I would have liked to have seen at least a couple more matches. Let it keep going and see if it works again. If it doesn't work first half, do what you've been doing, you know, move Ayew into the middle and put Olise out wide. You know what I mean? That's a better option. But again, that was the only thing that really bothered me. Again, Latin, obviously, that totally not bothering Danny Ward the entire match.
Yeah, I mean, something's wrong there. Like, again, I can understand the intent behind the decisions, you know. And you do start looking down the squad and start thinking to yourself sometimes, well, you know, I appreciate actually some in a lot of ways Vieira doesn't have many options when it comes to, you know, making big changes, particularly if you're looking at central midfield. But I don't know what Will Hughes must have done, you know, to never get a shout in there. I understand to some degree he has limitations, but I don't know. Does anyone have any clue why a midfield two of Doucouré and Will Hughes with Eze around hasn't been tried? Because that feels to me like that could really work. They got complementary skills.
Yeah, I think yesterday Hughes was ill.
Yeah.
So, him not being ill, I definitely think it's worth a try. Could we try pretty much everything else, right? I mean, we haven't really started. We haven't started Luka, but we have started. Again, this is the thing. Clearly, our midfield options are so limited. I mean, that is going to be the thing that's going to, if we don't have a good run into the World Cup and then hence the next transfer window, that will be our biggest issue. We did not replace Gallagher. Muted word, by the way, on Twitter. we really needed to have replaced him because, you know, Lewis O'Brien would have been a great option, Flynn Downs, whomever, but not, you know, just leaving ourselves with Luka, Hughes, I wouldn't say Jairo, but whoever we get to later, hopefully he played great at left back. We don't have any options in there, you know, and that's an issue. And, you know, Schlupp, as good as he does play sometimes, it's just not a good option in there. That's why I wanted to see, again, I go back to it, you know, put Olise in there, which, again, I would never even thought of, by the way, but as a good option prior to Chelsea. Honestly, I would rather have Matt Wyatt, but we're so limited. But you're right, Hughes as an option, I think, it's worth a try at this point. If he's healthy and not ill, just give that a shot.
Yeah, sorry, I got very general when I was rather than specific to that point.
Yeah, it's a good correction.
Otherwise, yeah, if we don't acknowledge the fact that Hughes wasn't available in this game, it sounds like I'm criticising Vieira for something he couldn't do. But no, the combinations that he has, I appreciate why Schlupp gets the nod in there, but it just goes back to the point when I think about the limitations that we have in our squad. And, you know, we've touched on all of them there to some degree because, you know, Schlupp is basically more often than not a first choice central midfielder. And that feels odd for a team trying to push top 10 in the Premier League. You know, we have a situation where Tyrique Mitchell, is getting knock after knock after knock, struggling a little bit, possibly carrying an injury. But, you know, so we've tried Schlupp in that position for part of a game, didn't go particularly well. So on this occasion, Gyro comes on. And as Patrick, as you said, he's done really well there. You know, he's been a former player of the month at left back for Palace, but doesn't really want to play there. And it's the first we've seen of him this season. So there's not a great deal of competition out there. And Joel Ward, right this moment, because of injuries, has got no competition at right back and is a weak link. I talk about it every week. I decided not to this week, really, but you brought him up. And, you know, you're right. Absolutely. He was targeted time and time again. And if you, as I said last week, if you want someone on putting his body on the line, doing last-ditch defending, tucked in from right back, Joel Ward is fantastic. If you want someone operating as a modern fullback, he is not that. So, you know, we have real problems in the squad that we haven't addressed. And last season we did tremendously well and a few players played out of their skins. But it's just got us that little bit exposed with our tough start this season. Cara.
Yeah, I was wondering what you guys think about the Mitchell scenario, because obviously the kind of perceived wisdom at the game yesterday was that he was taken off like for having a knock or something, but then in the post-match press conference Vieira said that wasn't it, he wanted to try something new, and I was like, what? Probably would have been a better line from like press training point of view, probably would have better line just to have said he was injured, to be honest. But no, I wanted to know what you guys thought of that, and like, what do you think he was trying then if it wasn't an injury, or do you think that was a kind of cover for the fact that Mitchell is picking up all these kind of knocks? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, one, I loved Vieira's honesty, because like you, Cara, I would have rather he said that it was an injury, because they took a knock in the first half, but if that wasn't it. But Mitchell just has been off it all season, bar a couple of matches. I mean, they put a great ball in for Mateta in that game when we the Villa game and had that great goal, but he really hasn't played well all season. But he's also, as Chris said, with Ward, there's no competition for him, so he doesn't have to be on it. He might be carrying a knock, and maybe Vieira would rather just say he did it tactically as opposed to say to teams, oh, by the way, he's injured, so you can keep, you know, you can keep going at him if you want to, so there's that. But he also doesn't get forward as much. He wasn't giving Wilf a lot of support, and that's one of the things that's been really good for us in the last year or so with Mitchell's development has been his link-up play with Wilf from that left side, and he doesn't get forward as much. I mean, I noticed yesterday, you know, he got forward, but he wasn't putting, you know, crosses in or getting balls forward. I mean, he was great last week with the setup for the goal for Ezra with Wilf, but it hasn't happened enough. So I just think that, and honestly, Vieira just figured, you know, I'll try something different. And to his credit, again, Chris mentioned, Gyro has not played the entire season, does not want to play left back. And yesterday, he was more than adequate. I would say borderline good yesterday as far as the left back. I mean, he got forward, he had a little some tricks and flicks, he was decent defensively, and he, you know, was helping out, you know, with our, you know, possession play, which is a problem. Certain players on our team get the ball, they lose it. You know, they don't know how to pass. Joey can pass the ball. So I'm loving the fact we have an option at left back now, and maybe that will, in turn, if he's not injured, will now push on Mitchell to play harder or play better.
Yeah, I mean, I was very, very surprised to see it as well. And you know, Patrick, you pretty much covered everything there. I would say, you know, we talked a little bit last week about Mitchell's struggles and where they, you know, they came about probably, hopefully coincidentally, after he got picked for England, you know, where I think expectations might have risen to some degree. You know, we're talking about, you know, an England international fullback, and all of a sudden that really puts the spotlight on a player. And, you know, he has weaknesses in his game that he was steadily working on, and maybe that, you know, there's been a bit of a knock to his confidence there, and he hasn't got back in an England squad since. But look, it's difficult. But what he tried works pretty well, and I think what he was saying in that was again, as Patrick suggested, it was about getting our foot on the ball and trying to get that bit of possession going, because we were a little frantic and a little bit lost with our passing. And I think that's, you know, something I would say Mitchell did in the game. He gave the ball away quite a lot. He never seemed completely relaxed in possession of a ball. And I think, weirdly, that's something that's hindered Gyro's career at Palace, in the fact that he is so relaxed when you give him a ball. You know, it's just natural to him. He's never going to panic. He's going to take his time and he's going to play the right pass or whatever. And sometimes that loses you that bit of momentum. And sometimes being that relaxed and being that confident in your ability on the ball means you don't quite do the stuff off the ball that you need to do. And that's what's held him back the whole time he's been at Palace. But I kind of had this sneaky little feeling that if Gyro can push Mitchell and for, you know, at left back for a few games, and let's say the next five games or so, Gyro starts at left back, come, you know, Mitchell coming back into things and winning that place back, you know, there's an argument Gyro would have built up enough momentum and enough first team minutes to really start looking again at that central midfield position. Because just like I talked about with Hughes, a fully fit Gyro Riedewald alongside Cheick Doucouré, you know, there's potential there as well. When you look at that skill set combined, there is potential there. But we've been talking about potential for Gyro for 5-6 years, haven't we? So yeah, it's a tough one. So anyway, moving on from that, I suppose we did have one really good chance, and it was Edouard who took it. And that shot, I think it went through the legs of the defender in the end, and it was actually a really good little spin and shot. And I just wanted to bring it up because it's the, you know, we talk about how bad Danny Ward is as a goalkeeper, but it's actually a really good save instinctively. So it always annoys me when someone who is, you know, someone pulls out their best against Palace. We've seen it a number of times over the years, usually with wonder goals and things like that. But, you know, I think in every other game this season, that goes in the goal, doesn't it? You know, but that was pretty much all I really felt like talking about in terms of the chances we created. And that's how bad I thought the game was. But I did want to move on from there to talk about something that's already been kind of hinted at in some of the things we've said already, which is, you know, I haven't really rounded on Vieira with any criticism this year, but I think when I look at the first of all, Jordan Ayew is getting lots of plaudits for his work rate and for how well he's been playing. And he has been playing pretty well, you know, absolutely on board with that. But we had a front line that was entirely ineffective. And when you look at someone like Jordan Ayew, I said some less kind things in the aftermath of the game, but I'm going to choose my words slightly more carefully. I think I used the phrase brain damage slug in relation to creativity, but I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say, in fact, you know, he's not, you know, when you look at Jordan Ayew's final pass in the game, tell me if I'm wrong as well, both of you can absolutely shoot me down, but I find too often when I'm looking at the build-up play for Palace, we get into the final third. Often when the ball finds itself at Jordan Ayew's feet, he plays a safe option. And there's nothing wrong with playing a safe option regularly at all. In fact, sometimes absolutely the right thing to do to allow you to change that angle of attack, allow you to knock it back to Anderson for a long diagonal, you know, switch the play, all those things. It's great to have a player who's prepared to take the simple pass rather than give it away continuously. And he always has a high pass percentage. But I feel like we lose momentum. Do you remember, Patrick, our conversations about late period punch at Palace, where we were talking about how much we love punching, but now he slows things down?
Yeah. I mean, that's how I feel. Became a bugbear, didn't it? I mean, he was really good as a winger, and then he went inside and he just started to play the ball sideways and backwards. Listen, you're not wrong. The thing is, I just think if our midfield was firing better, that wouldn't become such an issue. But I totally understand where you're coming from. Because our midfield is so disjointed with, again, he's starting this player and then he puts Sinchlup and we don't use Gyro and Luka comes on and tries to do a job. It's just, you're right. The Ayew stuff becomes more magnified because you're like saying, you know, you're an attacking player, attack, you know, go forward, put that incisive pass. But that's never been his game. I hate to say it. I mean, I've known of Jordan Ayew for a long time. I was a big fan of his father, Bede Pele. So I knew him and his brother Andre really well. And I was glad when we got him. And he's done some great things for us. But again, his game, he's, I don't know if you gave him sort of, there was an interview he did being in the air. He actually thinks he's a striker still, which is probably why we put him a striker yesterday, by the way. But so he doesn't seem to have as a wide player or a midfielder. So passing the ball as a striker really isn't your forte, right? It's supposed to be scoring goals, which we can argue he's not great at that either. But so, I mean, that's the thing. But again, I can never fault his effort. But Chris, you're not wrong.
I would only add to that, I don't disagree with anything either of you have said, but just in terms of yesterday's game, I don't know who he would have been, even if he'd had like a, he'd all of a sudden done the passes that we would all love to see him doing. Like, who was there? Who was he passing to? Because nobody was ever in a position to collect it, you know? So like, he would have been whipping balls in to absolutely nobody. And that was a big part of yesterday. Like, I feel like I normally come away from games, even like games we've had previously that have been really frustrating, really tough to take, and I can always find a positive and being like, yeah, okay, but I can see this or I can see that. I came away from yesterday and just nothing seemed to work. And I think that's what I'm struggling with kind of picking it apart. But then I think of like the Leeds game, and actually like the periods in the Leeds game where we didn't play very well, we were talking about it in the chat, weren't we, and saying like, okay, this bit isn't a system thing, this is just the players not doing what they need to do. So how much of what we saw yesterday is a continuation of, do we have an issue with our players not, you know, I don't know what the right kind of phrase is, not executing their jobs properly, or, you know, not putting their effort in? Is there an issue there? I feel like we're all kind of, myself included, quick to look at the system and quick to say like, oh, Vieira, what's going on here? But I don't know, how much responsibility do those individual players need to take for these kinds of performances as well?
Carl, that's a fantastic point. So I'm looking at the website now, Vieira's post-match comments. There was an opportunity to play 4-2. Their two worked hard, yes, but we weren't brave enough to break that line and find our holding midfielder from defence. When we did find our holding midfielder, we didn't have the pass going forwards. We didn't break the line today. We didn't take risks, and this is why we didn't create much in the second half. He knows, and I agree with him, 100% that was the issue. We did not take any chances, didn't break the lines. We did not get the ball forward enough. So what Chris said just now, 100% right. But that wasn't a tactical thing. That was a player's thing. The players have to do it. So Chris's point about Ayew is right. We have to be more forward-thinking. Yesterday was atrocious in that way. It was so poor. But the manager, at least at the end of the match, let the players know it just wasn't good enough.
But it's interesting because, you know, where I can link it back into Vieira and I can link it back into things like system and managerial decisions and game management is ultimately in the substitution. Now, a few people, as we've talked about, piled in on Wilf, despite, as we've said, the fact that, you know, he was isolated and unsupported because people expect him to do everything on his own far too often. Again, still. You know, and we get it. We get it that you can create something out of nothing, but you can't rely on that in any player. You know, look at City today, day of recording. I mean, you know, Haaland got nothing, and they lost. They lost the game. So you can't rely on any footballer to do it every single time. And when, you know, when the manager to me makes a decision and he's saying, okay, things aren't working here, I'm looking at the pitch, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to take off Wilfried Zaha, and I'm going to leave on the pitch Jordan Ayew, and I'm supposed to look at that. And was it how many minutes into the game? Was it 64 minutes? It might have been later than that. It might have been 76. I'm trying to remember.
It was 65 when Olise came on, because I noticed, I was talking to DR before, you only had 8 touches, but it was 65 minutes. You're right, correct.
Yeah. So I look at that and I'm thinking, okay, well, straight away, my brain is like, well, we've got no intention of winning this game. Because you can't have any intention of winning that match. Because we all saw how the match was going. The only way we're winning that game is if somebody does something just out of the ordinary. Because everyone's playing like crap on both sides. It's a horrible game of football. We've all seen games like that plenty of times in our existence. And thankfully, it hasn't been that often, you know, in recent times under Vieira. So, you know, plenty of credit for that. But to look at that game, in my view, and think, I know, best thing to do here is take Wilf off, and I'm going to leave people, you know, there's a long list of people on that pitch who can be very, very thankful it wasn't them that went off. And I don't understand it. I understand to some degree, like, if you're just maybe you're trying to baffle the opposition. I don't know. But to me, it's just madness. You're basically sending out a message that you're not really interested in winning the game. And that seemed to basically come to fruition after that change. You know, we talked about it. You mentioned it again there. Elise, 8 touches. Mateta, 5 touches. The game had gone when we made our changes. We had absolutely nothing. No momentum, no creativity, no forward thinking. The game had absolutely fallen apart. And when your changes make it worse, you know, you've got to own it. And Vieira has to own that as well. The players could have done better, but the changes did nothing but make it worse. So anyway, I wanted to highlight that I felt the best players on the pitch. I think Eze is really looking back to his best, and I think he tried it really, really hard in this game. His passing was pretty good. Lots of touches, lots of clever movement, but a fairly static team around him, which you know, didn't really help him stand out. And I know Southgate was there watching, and there was a lot of focus on Southgate watching Maddison and things like that. But I genuinely think that Southgate was watching Eze as well, because we know he was very, very close to an England squad. In fact, was in an England squad the day he got the Achilles injury, and I think we'll see him in one not too distant future. I can't speak, but you know what I mean. He'll be in one soon. That was tough, wasn't it? We got through it.
I'm going to make you go for it again, though. Is that you declaring that you think he's going to go to the World Cup?
I think it's difficult to make that change. So, but you know, there's stranger things have happened, haven't they? You know, I don't know what's the process for you're naming quite a big squad at first, and then you whittle it down, don't you?
Right.
Then you have standby people. I think I'm going to make a prediction. He might make the standby list. That's what I'm going to make a prediction.
That is a massive shout, Chris, and I would agree with you in any other time except for one. Southgate does not like change. He's not going to be in a player who's never been in a squad before into a chance. And then if Gallagher had been continued to play really poorly, I would say, you know, maybe take Gallagher's spot. But I think Gallagher might get back into the squad, which would be good for him. Mm. Again, muted by me on Twitter. But who knows? I mean, you might be right. I'd love him to make the World Cup squad. Would absolutely love it. But that is I'd like to know if you could find out how much that is. As far as betting, I'd put £10 on that right now, if I could.
Interesting.
Worth a flutter, as they say.
Worth a flutter. There you go. We'll see. We'll see how it pans out, you know. But yeah, I was thinking more future, but we'll see. Maybe a standby shout there. Guaita, I thought, played really well. He's been questioned a lot lately. Made some good saves. Handling was pretty decent. You know, what do you? I suppose both of you really, and you can pick who goes first. What do you make of him this season so far? I know he's come up a few times in our various chats. On various formats around from back of the nest, but you know, let's get some opinions on it now after he's had a noticeably good game, or at least in my opinion.
I'm a big fan. I'm not going to lie. I think one of the things that we don't mention enough, or we probably only mention it actually when he's not played, is the amount of security and confidence he gives our defensive players. Like, they don't worry about what's going on behind them when he's in goal. They don't have any kind of you don't see that kind of, I don't know the right phrases, but the kind of wobbles that I think we get when we've got any of our other keepers at the back. And I think in a game like yesterday, to have kept a clean sheet when everything else was falling apart, yes, we had some like decent defensive performances as well, but I think it goes underrated how much like Gaeta really keeps them together in those kind of backs against the wall situations. And I think we would really, really miss that very quickly if we were to see him kind of moving on from the club in any kind of long-term way.
I mean, Patrick, I've noticed you've got a little shirty with him sometimes in some of your comments.
No, I'm also a very big fan of his. Not Speroni like, but I do like him. But this is the thing, Chris. We have Sam Johnston now, and much as I like Butland, I think Johnston's a very good goalkeeper, and he's actually, his forte is shot stopping, much like Vicente. He's just bigger than Vicente. Having said that, he played really well yesterday. I've never actually called for him to be, well, I might have done it a couple of times on Twitter, I'll take that back, to be pulled as a starting keeper. So I take that back. I've definitely tweeted that we might want to change. But no, I'm a massive fan of his. Having said that, if Johnston was to come in, I think Johnston could do as good a job. His distribution is not great, and I think that's what kind of worries me. Did you guys watch the Liverpool-Man City game today?
I didn't see very much of it. I watched a little bit.
Did you see the goal by Salah?
I saw it was an assist by Alisson, but I didn't see
exactly.
How.
Exactly. And I am not saying that Guedes should be doing that, but my point is, there are players like Ederson and Alisson, distribution is just Pickford 2, is phenomenal. And I know VG's never going to be at that level, but that worries me about him, is his distribution. Having said that, it hasn't really... Brighton last year, it did, obviously, but it hasn't really cost us in a game. But no, I'm a big fan of his, and I hope he played great yesterday. This is, his second clean sheet with the Newcastle away. So, no credit to him. But like I said, I just we have a very capable backup, much more than we ever have in the past. No offense to Jack Butland. So, if Johnston comes in, I'm happy to see him in there just as much. But no, I'm a big Guaita fan.
Okay, good stuff. No, it was really nice to see him put in a performance like that. You know, he's always been such a positive person, and he's always really bought into the whole Palace family ethos, and he's got that little sort of crazy edge that great goalkeepers do have, and he's been wonderful for us, and it's gone really quick, his career at Palace. You know, he's what is he, 34 I guess now?
35.
So yeah. It just seems to have, you know, those few years just seem to have rushed by, and he's played a hell of a huge part in our recent history, and you know, really still a wonderful goalkeeper. So I did a little bit of a worry recently, but if he's still capable of performances like that, I think, you know, Johnston's gonna have to fight really, really hard to get in ahead of him. Just before we move on from that, any other performances either want to highlight, either positive or negative?
No.
It's
so depressing.
I mean, is that
exactly. What's the real game you pick out? Anybody?
That's a real stop making me talk about this game, Chris, for God's sake. We can all see you've got three more things written on your page, and we don't want to talk about them, so just let me go, you know? To be fair, we've covered one of them, and at least we didn't lose was my positive at the end of it. And I think, Patrick, you even mentioned, you know, the yellow card situation. I just wanted to make sure that was covered a little bit, because I did feel that impacted the game very negatively. You know, Anderson taking that early yellow card. I'm not sure. It's one of those sort of 50-50, was it the right call to sort of go with the professional foul type thing so early on in the game, or just, you know, let that situation play out. But, you know, he took the yellow card, and Doucouré's picking him up regularly, as you say, because the amount of work he's having to get through.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, we're seeing it happen to Doucouré all the time. He gets that yellow card, and you just know it's only a matter of time before we take him off, because he's, you know, I think he's a brilliant, brilliant player. And I really like the fact that even if he gets caught on the ball, he absolutely kills himself to get it back straight away. But it is a massive risk. You know, there were a couple of times against Leeds, a couple of times more than that I've seen this season, where that he's been within a matter of probably millimetres of being sent off, versus making a really great last-ditch tackle whilst on a yellow card. And you just think, I could totally understand Luca coming on, and you know, in the end, it's ended up being for the right reasons. So, I just felt that was a massive impact on our game, having those two players who would do so much good defensive work on a yellow card so early really did restrict how we could play.
I just wanted to add to what you both said about Doucouré, because the more pressure we keep putting on him and therefore putting him in this situation where he is going to get yellows, the more that's just going to be all the team wants to do from the first moment they get on the pitch against us, right? Like, they're just going to be on him to try and get that yellow card as early as possible, knowing that you're then just going to take him off. So it kind of, we just continually, there's nothing but weakening ourselves by carrying on with that, because we're never going to get a settled midfield all the while that's the way it's playing out.
And one more point. I thought refereeing yesterday was very poor in general. I really did. But shout out to, I don't remember who the referee was. I don't really care. I think it was Andy Madley. It was Andy Madley. That dive by Madison at the end of the match was embarrassing. Mm. And thank goodness he did not call it a penalty and or VAR, because that was so, so poor. And he gave me yellow card for diving. But that's the kind of play. I bet if it happens against Liverpool, they actually do call the penalty. But if Leicester's so poor right now, they're like, yeah, they're not getting that. But that was embarrassing by Madison yesterday. He should be ashamed of himself. It was really bad.
I hope you blocked him on Twitter because of it, Patrick.
Probably have. The 100 and plus so that I've blocked so far, I've added to my list.
Love it. You're right. It was a terrible dive. But you know, the game itself, that kind of sums it up. Really, that kind of ridiculousness of that whole situation really sums up the game. That you know, we have so little to talk about. So little, really. It's a miracle we've done as long as we have. Frankly,
it is.
So I think we'll probably leave it there. But look, there was a lot to get into, and we'll cover some of the comments that came in about the game as well now. And you know, obviously I'll ask for views from the pair of you as we go through these, but we won't spend too long doing it because we got our lives to get to. But Barry Anderson on our Facebook page talked about the strikers, said our strikers are not much cop, rely on Zaha too much. If he goes, we'll be stuffed. Yeah, well, that's next season, isn't it? So it says we need to get some. We seem to get cheap in, buy quality strikers and you get a decent return. No cheap or loans or free transfers don't do it for me, I'm afraid. And well, I'll take that one for a start, which is, it's a lovely, really easy thing to say, isn't it? It's such an easy thing to say, buy a quality striker. Right. But how difficult is it? A lot of the kind of best strikers in the Premier League that have sort of been in our price range have really been people taking punts on people and getting a little bit lucky or taking a long time and developing a player. I mean, look, one of the most impressive strikers this year is Ivan Toney, right? So, you know, Newcastle Brentford. Say again?
Newcastle didn't want.
Yeah, Newcastle didn't want him. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, for us, it's difficult. We're in that horrible position of being a Premier League side and being an established Premier League side. But not being able to shop at the table where you're paying 40 or 50 million pounds for a striker. And look at the 40 or 50 million pound strikers that people have been getting. I mean, you know, West Ham have tried four or five times and finally got one that looks decent in that price range.
Right.
You know, it's crazy. It's, you know, so I can't see what we're going to do there. You know, we are going to have to shop at the table that we're shopping at. And hope either we bring somebody through who can score the goals. But, you know, Mateta can put the ball in the net. You know, Edward could put the ball in the net. But at Premier League level, it's a really tough thing to do on a consistent basis if you haven't got a tremendous team of international footballers, world-class international footballers around you. Because look at, I mean, I'd pick out, is it something like Zaha? Is something like, I don't know, fifth? In a certain number of Premier League matches in terms of goal scorers. Like, I can't remember. Like, he is, you know, he is up there in terms of scoring rate in recent times with majority of strikers around at other clubs. It's only a few notably huge names that score loads of goals on a consistent basis. But it's tough. It's really tough to find them out there. And I'd say, Barry, that is a good point. If we could go out there and get a guaranteed quality striker, but it's a guaranteed quality striker who's going to work in our system, and that's the hard part. And you know, you spend your 40 or 50 million on that and it doesn't work or they get injured, it's kind of, that's the end of it for you, and you might as well give up.
I'd add to that as well, and I think it speaks to kind of the rest of that thread, the conversation that happens on that thread, is that I can't think of a transfer window recently where we've only been looking for one position. So it's not like we have a big budget that we can spend on one or two players. Like, we're always filling quite a few gaps or trying to fill quite a few gaps. So, you know, I don't see that changing anytime soon. I think the reliance is going to be more and more on those academy players coming back, bringing people back off loan, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, as much as we'd all like to see it, I'm not sure that we are going to see any kind of big, costly star striker coming in. I just don't think that's the way that the club is being run or is going to be looking forward.
No, and we haven't spent, you know, peanuts on players either. It's, you know, the strikers we have brought in, you know, Edouard wasn't cheap at all. And look, you know, you want to tell me what's the most pressing need in our team? It isn't a striker, you know, it's not this season anyway. Right now, it's the full-back positions and central midfield. And as you say, Cara, that's multiple positions on a limited budget. And you're fighting with everybody else at the same level. So it's a really tough one. But, you know, I think on there, the wonderfully named Droopy McCall said, most of the strikers, forwards or wingers we brought in the past 10 years don't get better or develop. They seem to be worse after their Palace stint is over. Bizarre. And it's like, I think you could probably make that statement at most other clubs, you know, certainly at our level and around that kind of area, where you're just effectively recycling similar types of players and in similar types of circumstances. You're trying to pick people at the kind of peak of their powers. And, you know, it's an odd one.
I disagree with that comment, though, because, you know, most of the players we buy, attacking players, are moving up, stepping up from the lower divisions. And I would argue Ezra and Olise have gotten better since we got them, not worse. So there's that.
So you cut out a little bit there, Patrick, but you're right, yeah. For sure. Ezra and Elisa are players that have improved already. You know, you go back a little further than that and you think of the explosion of Yannick Bolasie as a Palace player. You know, we brought him for 200k and sold him for like 27 million or something, you know. That's a player who got better. Yeah, I get the point, he fell off a cliff after he went to Everton, but, you know, that's kind of neither here nor there. It's there's plenty of players that have improved.
And don't forget loan players as well.
Punchin wasn't young and he got better when he got to Palace. Sorry, Cara. But you know what I mean? So he was another one that came on and was brilliant for us, kept us up with the goals that he scored that year, you know, scored in the cup final. I mean, he wasn't young, but he definitely didn't get worse at Palace than he was before he came to us. So.
Yeah. And all I was going to say is don't forget loan players. Like, we have a really, really good record of loan players coming to us and developing really well. And I know the nature of developing loan players different than ones you're buying, but it's just because they're more expensive players and that's why we're getting them on loan and we're not buying them. So, you know, it's kind of the way it goes.
I still think Scott Sinclair should have stayed with us. Anyway, let's move on. A couple of comments just to read out. Richard Evans said that at least Riedewald played, which obviously we covered, and that was something that I very much felt myself. Lucy got in touch and said must win on Tuesday, which we'll very quickly talk about in a sec. Tom Rado got in touch, talked about the game in general, said we had the right personnel, which not necessarily agree with that, but he did say something I did agree with, which is that there's no runs in behind, no gambles, and that's what we needed. We just chose not to play the passes, and he doesn't really understand why, and I think that's a fair comment. Daniel Babington Brown said, let's hope we don't perform like that too often this season. And that was very disappointing, which I think is worth noting because we haven't really played that badly very often. And it's, as I said, it's the least entertaining game for Palace under Patrick Vieira, in my opinion. So I kind of count my blessings that it's an aberration rather than something we see every week. You know, Paul Foster felt everybody was below par today and Gyro was our best player. Matt Watson called it a disappointing performance, looked messy and disjointed. The passing was poor, complete lack of cohesion, gave away too much possession. The only positive is that we got a point onto the next game, echoing some of my words there as well. And Richard Evans has also pointed out that he felt that Leicester did actually stop us playing the game that we wanted to. Or he said, there could be some other reasons why we're having a bad day. And I think that's generous, Richard. In all honesty, and I'm sure you get that from what we said today, because certainly Patrick Vieira didn't think it was down to Leicester stopping us play. He certainly felt it was down to how we performed ourselves.
I'd say on that as well. I don't think Leicester thought they achieved that. Like, so my sister lives in Leicester, and she said to me today, like, hold on a minute, so what was the score? She said, because I spoke to you and you said like Palace were terrible, and I've spoken to my friends in Leicester and they said Leicester was terrible, so like it must have been a good game for someone. And I was like, no, it wasn't. That's literally, you've literally just summed up the game there.
That is brilliant. Sometimes you get the biggest truth from somebody who doesn't really follow football.
Yep.
You know, how can if it was, you know, somebody asking that question, oh, if your team was terrible and they say their team was terrible, what the hell happened? Someone must have been good. No, you'd think that, wouldn't you? You'd think that there couldn't possibly be two teams playing appallingly and boring the hell out of you. Welcome to football. But anyway, yeah, so look, we've got Wolves coming up. I'll get a quick word from each of you and just a quick summary of what do you think we need to do going into the game. But, you know, obviously Wolves, fresh off the back of a 1-0 victory over Forest under interim manager Steve Davis, not the snooker player. That would be crazy. It's not him. it's the other guy, one of the other guys. I think there's a few Steve Davises. But anyway, that one, the football one. But they also, you know, potentially were looking at Nuno coming back, and now apparently he's not the favourite. We'll see what they do. But, you know, a team in flux, started poorly this year, not had the difficult fixtures that we've had for sure. But coming off the back of a 1-0 victory, maybe they will have a bit of momentum. Maybe that change. Palace will tend to get teams shortly after they've changed managers and things like that. But, you know, I suppose the question, starting with you, Patrick, what do we do differently against Wolves?
I think you go back to the Olise, Eze and Decore midfield. Leave Ayew, Wilf and Edouard up top and then go with that. Back four is the back four. And just try to ball dominate. I mean, Wolves do not press the way other teams press. I mean, Dee and I did a preview. Please check it out on YouTube. If you can, about the Wolves match. And we talk about, you know, how dangerous Neves can be, so you got to negate him. But my real issues are at the fullbacks, and they have Daniel Podence on one side attacking, and you've got Adama Traore. I fear for Joel Ward again on Tuesday a lot, because they're very skillful and very good. Having said that, I mean, Dee pointed out that last year, arguably our two best performances last year were against Wolves away and Wolves at home. So we beat them last year twice. So I'm hoping that we can play as well at home and beat them comfortably.
How about yourself, Cara?
I don't have anything. Yeah, I don't have anything to disagree with on that personnel-wise. I totally agree with Patrick. I think the only thing I'd add would be, like, when we've played really well, you can see the players are loving playing their football, and that's just not what we've seen over the last couple of games. So I think regardless of kind of who the personnel is, something has got to switch on, or the negative stuff switch off for the players over these kind of couple of days going into the Wolves game, that like go out there and do that kind of what was becoming associated with Vieira's management style, that he could, you know, bring out this confidence in players to be creative and to kind of use the space and enjoy it. And I know that feels like a really kind of soft thing to say, but that's definitely what's been missing from our last couple of performances. So however they make that happen, I would say that's what needs to change to get some results going again.
Yeah. I think the only thing I would say is I don't have like really strong feelings about, you know, about which lineup starts the game so much. I just want to see us, I'd like us to look at the Wolves game as an opportunity to sort of introduce a little bit more unpredictability. You know, there's a danger, you know, this is one of the things that, you know, a manager has always got to be mindful of, you know, when they've got a philosophy and they're getting their team used to it. Last year we were something of an unknown quantity under Vieira for quite a while. Teams took a little while to work us out, and then over the summer we actually did a really sensible thing, which was develop a different way of playing that we could switch to, which is the back, you know, the three at the back, just give us a different option. And that was really with a view to playing against the bigger teams, but we gave ourselves that kind of flexibility, and I thought that was really good thinking. I think we slightly failed in getting all the players to enable us to switch as often as we could and to play as well as we could in that situation. So I think we're aware of this, but I think we've just become a little bit one note, a little bit one paced at times. You know, I haven't seen too many lightning fast breaks. You know, when we do manage to do it, take the goal against Leeds, it's, you know, that's quality passing and directness. And we didn't actually do it very much against Leeds, but when we did it properly, you know, we scored a tremendous goal. So I actually think it's all about the changes. I think we play the game like we want to play the game, but I'd like to see us get to, you know, that hour mark. And if we're not comfortably winning that game, I think get some unpredictability. And I'd like to see Malcolm Ebuwe. I'd like to see him on the pitch for, you know, 30 minutes minimum on the right side, allowed to run and just run at players. Just say, get on there. Don't worry. Give the ball away as much as you're flipping well like. Just get up and down that flank. Put them under pressure. You know, go one way, go the other. Put the fullback on the floor, and just try and inspire a bit of passion and a bit of unpredictability. You know, the Palace way that we sometimes talk about. And I'm going to be careful saying that because I don't want to talk about things like the Spurs way or the West Ham way. But you know what I mean? That pacey, tricky winger thing that can snap us out of it. You know, we're not in crisis, but that's what I want us to see us do differently. Let's use those subs. Let's chuck a couple of young players on and tell them to be unpredictable. Tell them to do what comes naturally. You know, stick JK on, tell him to get a goal. You know, that's all I want. Just a little bit of excitement, a little bit of something different. And I think that could be the catalyst for the rest of the season if we're lucky. So I'll leave it there. Thank you very much to Patrick and to Cara for their time today. Thank you for, you know, everybody who listened to the show, and in particular those of you who got in touch. You know, read out a bit there, not all of it, got plenty more than that, and we used that to kind of structure the show, which really helped me earlier on write it in about half an hour. So thank you very much for that. So the preview team will of course be back with you in midweek, and they'll be looking at the Wolves game that's played on Tuesday night this week, as well as looking ahead to the weekend game against Everton. Obviously, get yourselves onto YouTube watching all the stuff that Patrick D and Stan and T and everybody's doing over there. And just you know, till then, thank you. And come on, you Palace!
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.